Our next
president is Dr. Rosemary Caron.
Can I say Caron?
PhD, MPH.
Please, I'm going
MPH is an associate professor and former director of the Masters in Public Health Program in the Department of Health Management Policy, College of Health and Human Services, University of New Hampshire. Prior to academia, Dr. Caron practiced public health for several years in a variety as a practitioner.
Good morning, everyone. It's a real pleasure to be here with you today. And as Dan mentioned, the title of my presentation is a little bit different than what you've heard. I think we're going to go to the micro level now, as opposed to the macro level. We're going to be real specific, where I'd like to share with you a course that I teach at the University of New Hampshire in epidemiology. And my intent here is for really colleges, universities that may be considering delving into undergraduate public health education, how even small steps can sort of get you on your way, and how one course can and hopefully make a difference in helping you along that path. And like the other presenters, I have no relationships to disclose. But before I get into the course structure and design of this specific public health course, I do want to make mention that this course is grounded. It's grounded in an important framework that you've already heard mentioned here this morning. Donna discussed the LEAP framework, and the other presenters, Brenda and Lauren, have already mentioned the Educated Citizen in Public Health initiative, which has been spearheaded by Drs. Riegelman and Dr. Albertine, who are both here with us today. And it's also been supported by numerous organizations, including AACNU, APTR, which is the Association for Prevention Teaching Research, and the Council of Colleges of Arts and Sciences. So as many of you are aware, the Educated Citizen in Public Health Initiative does promote that an understanding of public health issues is a central component of an educated public and is necessary to develop social responsibility. So when you take just that one piece of that initiative and compare it to the LEAP framework, they truly complement each other. And they both are aligned just beautifully with the Institute of Medicine's report, Who Will Keep the Public Healthy?, where you're all familiar with the recommendation, which is a real challenge, that all undergraduates should have access to education in public health. So, being extremely excited and interested in those initiatives, I sort of went back to UNH, University of New Hampshire, and asked myself, okay, how can I respond to this call? I teach a few courses in public health. We've got a Master's of Public Health program. How can our one institution make a difference? And so I started off small with this intro course. It's an epidemiology course, but to sort of step back, because there's lots of epi courses. I'll call it epi for short. And looking in the literature, there's been quite a bit written about this particular discipline, and that what I think is so attractive about it is the dual benefit that it does promote regarding being a liberal art as well as a professional skills-based course. And that's the heart of how I teach, and I'll go through the course design with you. Frazier has described epidemiology as a low-tech science, and I'll talk more about that as well, that it does generate the kind of thinking that a liberal education should cultivate. I myself am a product of a liberal education, so I believe real strongly in that. But it also aligns nicely with the scientific method, trying to promote deductive reasoning, etc., while also maintaining that concern for aesthetic values. So really a nice blending of disciplines. Whereas Ibrahim kind of takes that view and expands it from, well, not only the scientific method, but this discipline has broad utility. We can use it in health management and policy as we think about not only assessing the health of community, but for hospitals and care practice and planning, as well as policy and evaluation. So I share this just so you can keep in mind, you can sort of kill many birds with one stone with this one particular course. So now to bring you to where I live at UNH and talk about this course, which is titled The Epidemiology and Community Medicine. And I'd say within the last only about 2 years, I've seen the student audience for this course change. It is a required course in our major. I'm housed in the Department of Health Management and Policy, which is in our College of Health and Human Services in a state public university. We've got a total of about 150 undergraduate students, so we're not too big. We're actually one of the smaller departments within our college. So all of our students, whether they like it or not, have to take this course. It's required. But I've also seen within the last 2 years, this course is now also required by nutrition majors who are in a wellness option. In addition, within starting actually this fall, medical microbiology majors now have this course listed as an elective. I will share with you, I'm teaching this course this semester, 80% of my students are medical microbiology majors. So I have seen a real shift with this one course. We do not have a major in public health at UNH. We have a minor within our Department of Health Management and Policy. We have two tracks, one in management and one in public health, that students will decide to follow that track the midpoint of their junior year. The public health track is newer than the management track, so we do have fewer students in that track, but it is growing. And I've also listed here that this course is a general science education requirement. We call it a gen ed, and it's a science gen ed. So what that means is students that don't want to take biology and chemistry figure, well, I'll take this thing called epi. I have no idea what it is. I just know it's not chemistry or biology. So I have quite a diverse student audience in this class. There's no prereq for this course, and anyone freshman to senior can take it. So lots of different masters to serve, if you will. It can be quite challenging. The course is offered both semesters. I'm the instructor for the course, and it's capped at 87 students. The reason for the cap, the only reason for the cap is, and this is fortunately or unfortunately, this could change, is that there's a laboratory component with the course, which is a computer-based lab, and we're limited by the number of computers we have. So that's what limits the course. We may add sections. That's up for discussion now within the department, because it's other departments within the university are seeing the attractive attributes, I think, of this course and public health. I will also mention that, and we're trying to get a better handle on this, that just by being in the classroom, I can hear conversations and chats about the public health minor that we have. So we don't have a good handle on the number of students that are minoring in public health at our university right now. But my sense, if I was a betting person, is that it has grown significantly over the last 2 years. I frequently will meet with students who learn about public health a little bit later, maybe in their junior or senior year, where by that point they're not going to switch a major. They may not be able to fit a minor in. So we're trying to get them earlier at the freshman year, if not even before they come. So now to get into some of the nuts and bolts of how I teach this course, and my real intent here, because I am limited with time, is to provide just a skeleton structure for anyone who's interested in kind of the more details on how I teach this course. I would be more than happy to chat with you. But the course objectives are based in knowledge, skills, and values, where the knowledge I've highlighted in some of the sections in terms of topic areas that I cover. The real skills, and I think it was Lauren's presentation, which tried to dissect what you hope an undergrad will get versus a graduate student. So the skills, I liked the words that you used, the verbs were very much recognized. So we're not going into the stratosphere with anything here, but skills in terms of being able to calculate rates and know what they mean, and that's the extent to really where we go with it. And the values are to... My real intent here is to show them the broad utility of this tool of public health, this basic science tool of public health, and to appreciate what it can and cannot tell you, what its limitations are as well. The sections include the history. You can't get out of Epi without talking about Jon Snow. It would just be a crime. So we spend significant time on the history and then breaking into the two branches of descriptive and analytical Epi, and then ending that to show how that ties into evidence-based public health application. The course at our institution, I teach it twice a week in 80-minute blocks with a laboratory component that meets once a week for 80 minutes as well. And now, a little bit more of the detail. I do lecture. I don't think you can teach without really getting away from it, regardless of the technology age that we're in. But I will share with you that I do keep it to a minimum. For an 80-minute class, it's no more than 15, 20 minutes of lecture and mixing it up. So I encourage the students to read the chapter following the class. Let me be the first one to at least introduce these concepts, and then have them go back and reaffirm and look in the text for questions they may have, and then certainly bring them to class. I go between PowerPoint and whiteboard. I know, realize a lot of this may be very basic, but what I have found is that not relying solely on PowerPoint or not relying solely on a whiteboard or a blackboard, the PowerPoint is really for the visual component. I find as I get older, I'm more visual. And students, some students are the same way, but then other students like the pace that I have to slow down if I'm going to write something on a whiteboard or a blackboard, so they then can take notes. I'm a real fan of active learning, so I actually do not post my lecture notes. It's in the student's best interest to come to class to be able to take those notes and participate in active learning. The other piece that's been real important, I have found, I teach other public health courses, is the media component. These students, again, in the age that we're in, not only want to know what's going on in the world around them, but they want to be part of the solution. And it doesn't always have to be a disease outbreak that we talk about in terms of media events in an epidemiology course. It can truly be, if you hear, oftentimes New Hampshire is touted as being the healthiest state in the nation, and I'll say, really? And then we're able to go through and really look at what was the data behind that, and, well, what's going on in your community, and kind of break it down that way. I also want to make mention something that I've done a little bit differently within the last year or so, is using literature and the arts. And I want to give credit to Brenda Kirkwood, who's helped me with that. She's helped me develop some homework assignments where we've incorporated poetry and songs to help illustrate social determinants of health, which is just an interesting way, another tool to use to illustrate the utility of Epi. Exploring questions. So although for me 87 is a big class, I'm still fortunate in that I can keep a discussion going. Not for 30 minutes at all, but I can certainly keep, you know, a good 10 to 15 minute discussion going on a real interesting topic. The application is through the laboratory exercise that I shared with you, case studies and homework. In addition, bless you, because this is so based in really a didactic component, I really feel strongly about bringing colleagues from my work as a public health practitioner in the field into the classroom, because I think that really helps to solidify that what we're reading in the textbook, that's great, but now let me tell you how it really happens. Okay, so they can the students appreciate that. Reinforcement, many of you already do this, study guides, review sessions, etc. And the evaluation is primarily through examinations. I'm not going to go through this exercise in great detail because of the time limitation, but in terms of I think what I've already shared with you about the course does go a long way in promoting public health literacy, and the community-based learning aspect of the course. I go between requiring a service-based project that has to be done in the local community, the community of Durham, or if the student lives nearby in a related community. But then I also have something called a community health assessment, where I have to make an abridged version of this, because this could be really an assignment that could take them all semester, but to assign one of four communities within the state of New Hampshire, and then to really set them free and tell them, you need to find the data that's going to let you know whether that community is healthy or not. What are some of the issues that community is dealing with? Oh, and guess what? You may not be able to find that data. All right, so They're loving that right now. So it helps them to get into the data, get that real practical feel, so they can quantify that information. But then it's not only did you find it, now what does it mean? So putting context around it, and then proposing a real feasible, practical recommendation to whatever the issue is for that community. You have to consider, as we all know, budgets and resources, et cetera. So although this is a challenging assignment for them, I'm actually okay with it. I do a more advanced piece in the MPH program with it. But for undergraduates, I want to push them a little by the time this project comes around and get them thinking outside the box. I grade leniently. I will share that with you on this one. And I'm not going to go through everything here, but just some selected resources for textbooks. I use the first one listed there by Fries and Sellers, the most recent edition published by Jones and Bartlett. Marilyn Timrick's also been used in the past, and then Fries EPI 101 is also another resource. For classroom and lab assignments, the Young EPI Scholars, and I think I've heard they may be eliminating that program, I'm not sure. But wonderful case studies there online. And I've also received some funding to kind of develop my own modules for the lab, so I'd be happy to share that with anyone. The Prevention Education Resource Center is another resource, and Merrill has just published Principles of EPI Workbook, which includes lots of great class exercises as well. And then for the community piece, there's no shortage of resources there. Wonderful listservs through Community Campus Partnerships for Health, Commission on Community Engaged Scholarship. The CES for Health is a wonderful website that it houses reviewed, peer-reviewed projects that are community-based. And so it also, again, gives that real practical flavor to public health work. NACHO and ASPH is other resources. And lastly, lots of words here, but this is sort of my closing philosophy on teaching EPI. I think it is just such a wonderful course to engage students. Many students are hearing about EPI and public health for the first time when they take my course, and many go on to minor. I've had students switch their major because they've gotten so excited about epidemiology. So I feel the real benefit is not only resulting in an educated population, but one who can make informed decisions and participate now on a personal level in activities that promote health, not only for themselves, but again, this is our future, so eventually for their own families, and hopefully promoting health in the communities that they decide to work and live in. Just some references, and then lastly, my contact information. Thank you very much.